You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
The 5 o'clock refresh is brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light, made to chill. We always look forward to this conversation. Paul Moyer is here with us to talk some football. Paul, how are you, man?
I'm doing well. Happy pre-4th of July. Feels a little weird that we're kind of in summer. Doesn't feel like summer with all that's going on in the weather, but happy pre-4th. It's always a good time.
Yeah, happy pre-4th to you.
Thank you.
And you're right about the weather. It's like one day it's 78, 79, feels like summer, and then like yesterday it's raining, it's gray, it's windy, feels like fall. So it's hard to get a grip on what's happening out there.
Well, for all of us who've been in the Northwest now forever, it's just typical weather for this time of year, and it's going to get good soon, and we need it. We need to at least be sitting outside a little bit.
Yeah. Hey, I want to get your take on something. It's a conversation that John Clayton had with the NFL writer for the Boston Globe, Ben Volen, and they were talking about the Patriots, and they were talking about Belichick's philosophy when building the defense, talking about how he likes to build that defense from back to front. Cut number four.
The Patriots defense the last several years, I don't know if it's something that Bill has always believed in, or it's just something his roster building philosophy of today's NFL and especially today's CBA, but he builds that defense back to front, and he believes that you can kind of scheme up and manufacture pass rush, and you don't need to have the Von Miller 20 sack guy. You know, you can find ways to get pressure on the quarterback with blitzes and stunts and whatever. But if you have great cover corners and great versatile safeties, that's, you know, that can lock guys down and give the guys up front time. The belt, you know, not to be too cliche, but it is a passing league, and I think the number one thing you want to do is defend the pass.
Now, you heard that cut, and John Clayton had talked about it. He believes that's what Pete Carroll's trying to do as well, obviously, with Diggs being brought in, Dunbar being brought in. What do you think of that? Do you agree with that?
Well, I agree with how Belichick's done it, and he is. He's a schemer. They scheme, and it's not that other teams don't scheme, but they probably scheme more than anybody else, and that's a lot of work because that means you're coming in almost with a new playbook every single week. A lot of coaches, they want to hang their hat on, you know, what they do well. They're going to be very consistent what they do, you know, in the fourth quarter. And they rely on, you know, the players, obviously, to win. And you try and coach them up to be the best they can. Bill, you go look at the amount of superstar defensive players they've had over the years, not many. You know, really smart linebackers. If they do get a pass rush guy who is getting close to his contract, they ship him out. So there's no question what they do. I think obviously the Seahawks are trying to improve the secondary with some of their moves, and they needed to. I mean, we had the Legion of Boom that's gone. We had to replenish that. I just don't think Pete's ever going to be that guy that says, okay, today we're going to blitz 70% of the time. Next week we're going to play cover two. Next week we're going to play three deep zone. Next week it just keeps changing it up every single week. Because his thing is, he'll say, look, it's not what they do, it's what we do, right? Whereas Belichick and New England, they're different. They are, hey, we're going to take away what they do best. We're going to game plan this. We're going to take our calculated shots with, you know, certain types of blitzes. And I, you know, I was a little bit in that camp when I was coaching. I liked the scheme. I thought it was fun. But it is exhausting though when you got to come up with a completely new defense every week and teach it. And, it takes a great coach to do it. And they've obviously done a great job with it.
Yeah, I thought a good example of that was in the Super Bowl a couple of years ago when, I don't know, it was the third or fourth play. I think the Rams tried to run a fly sweep. They shut it down. Then they brought fly sweep motion, and they knocked the guy down. Knock him down. Don't let him get out into the flat. And that was like, you know, it was kind of the way they schemed up St. Louis back when trying to remember the running back, that they said, we have to hit him on every single play. And yeah, he's always done a great job with that stuff. But yeah, I'll say this, Paul, I have a lot of faith in Pete, his ability to develop, you know, players, especially defensive backs, and then, you know, John Schneider's ability to draft them. But, man, I'm looking at the 17 defense versus now. They've gotten worse in almost every category. I mean, yards per game, they were 11th and 17. They were 27th last year. Points, they went from 14th to 22nd. The only stat that I got out of six stats where they got better was takeaways, and they've always been pretty good at that. But almost everything has gotten worse. Is this kind of an emergency type of deal that these young guys that they've drafted, Marquise Blair, LJ Collier, you know, even Trey Flowers, over the last 3 years, you know, Shaquille, I mean, these guys really have to step up, I feel like they will, but I wonder if they're at a point where, like, if this doesn't get better, then, you know, maybe need to rethink things or maybe do something that, you know, that they normally wouldn't do.
Well, I think they're going to be better because, you know, we still have, you know, Bobby and KJ. But, you know, outside of that, this is a pretty young defense. I mean, it's really young. It's completely deep. You know, look at all the guys we've lost from the Super Bowl. I mean, there's nobody but Bobby and KJ left. You know, so you've had to completely redo this defense. I think they thought it would probably come back quicker, you know, particularly at the defensive, on the defensive line. You know, again, last year, you know, just the amount of sacks is a little shocking. And again, some of it's our scheme, you know, just allowing the quick passes and not giving the D line quite the opportunity. But there's also a reason why they did that. You know, maybe they just didn't feel that we had those guys. This year's a big year. I mean, it's a big year for, obviously, for Norton. It's a big year for these second-year players. And again, if those guys don't make the jump, you guys have heard me say this a few times, we could be a 7-9 team, 8-8 team very easily. But we have a chance for these guys to really become good football players. And we've got a great nucleus, you know, built around it. So, big jump. You're right. We can't keep sliding down that pole, you know, because we do win. We're never going to get those top draft picks, you know, that all of a sudden, you know, you've got a world beater, you know, coming off the edge. But I really do. I just think we're really deep this year. I think they're going to let their young guys who are athletic, good football players, just go play. And I'm expecting a big improvement.
Hey, I was just looking at the text here, Paul, and we talked about this earlier in the show, and this is from the 509 saying, Pete is so predictable. Now, we talked about, you know, Pete's ability to adapt or inability to adapt, as some see it. Some look at, despite him going to the playoffs every year but two, never having that single-digit win season, like, you know, the 5-4-6 win season that the other teams in the division have had, he's still looked at as underachieving with the level of talent he's had. Does he look like a guy who's unwilling to adapt or just is predictable or stuck in his ways? Despite all that success, there are a lot of people that still have issues with Pete.
Wow. Yeah, you know, he's had two of all those years. He had 2 years where he was 7-9. One of them he went to the playoffs. So that's been a heck of a run there. Well, and obviously since Russell's been here. Underachieving, I could throw it on the offensive side. You know, when we looked at our offensive line over the last few years and the number of wide receivers we have and just top draft picks on the offensive side, I mean, there are not a bunch of them. You know, and for us to do what we've done and to be a top 10 offense really just built around Russell Wilson, I would say that's, at times, I think we've overachieved. And defensively, we've rebuilt. You know, I mean, it's obviously been a decline since 2016. This is a big year. We've got a lot of youth. I think we can judge that after this year, Bob, because, you know, if that's the case and you say, look, these are my guys. I mean, we're not getting younger. It's not like we're going to all of a sudden magically, you know, replace, you know, half of our defense. Then I think maybe they have to relook and say, okay, is our scheme, do we need to make some tweaks to it? And I think they have made a few tweaks. It just hasn't been that successful last year. But, you know, again, I'd go and look at San Francisco. San Francisco runs a similar defense, but they got some horses up front that can get after you. And maybe he does need to adapt, Bob, to, hey, if we don't have those guys that can flat out rush the quarterback, you know, maybe we need to be more creative in what we do, you know, week to week. But it's been awfully successful. And this goes back to USC. I mean, his defense hasn't really changed. We just got to make sure we have the right players that can run it.
Hey, Paul, Bob and I talked about this in the outset, and, you know, it kind of had to do with, okay, what if the defense doesn't develop the way that they want it? And, you know, we talked a little bit about Antonio Brown. And as Bob pointed out, I mean, some of the sexual harassment or assault, I mean, that has to be entirely eradicated before you even consider it. But, you know, as far as his antics in the locker room, let's listen to Brady Henderson here in Cut 8 about Russell possibly being interested in Antonio Brown.
So from what I understand, from what I've been told, what was reported, you know, was accurate, that, you know, Russell is very interested in having him around. And I'm not breaking any news to you there, Jake. But also the fact that, you know, there was some discussion there a few weeks ago. And from what I understand, that there hasn't been a ton going on since then. And I kind of get the sense that that was more so due diligence on the Seahawks' part than an indication that anything is immediate there, just because there is a lot to be sorted out with Antonio Brown.
I guess my question would be, Paul, what state of disrepair would the Seahawks have to fall into in order to sign Antonio Brown?
Well, I'm so hesitant to say we won't go that low, but if they sign him, then I've got some backpedaling to do. I just don't think we'll sign him. I think there's just too much baggage. I think, you know, from an organization and what they believe in, I think that'd be a hard sell. Now, if they did, they would definitely, you know, full court press that from how they communicated it. But I just think that's extremely difficult. I will say this, though. It also shows really how competitive Russell Wilson is. Because, you know, he said, I don't remember any of his off-field stuff. I just know how skilled he is. And he still is probably the most talented wide receiver in the NFL. You know, maybe I could argue that with a couple other guys, but I certainly would put him in the top, you know, five. How's that? And, you know, to get a top five wide receiver that is at times unguardable, that's intriguing. It's just, in today, we already know that in today's day and age, it's just, man, to bring on that kind of baggage, man, you've got to be. I just don't see it. So I don't think we'll hit to that point, Dave. How's that? I don't think we'll get that.
That's
well.
Yeah. Well, like you said, you might have to do some backpedaling, but I'm with you on that one. Actually,
Look, if they did sign him and he was a model citizen the rest of the way and threw up some great numbers and we won some Super Bowls, you know, I can probably change my mind, maybe, but he's that one that's just, it's just tough. There's just too much on video and documented. And if they came to, I think, and made a case that, you know, he had some mental issues, which I think we could all probably agree that's probably in there. And here's the steps he's doing to take care of that. And he was, you know, truly humble about it. And he came out and said, look, this is what I'm doing. I'm contrite, all that stuff. There's always a possibility.
Yeah, I'm with you, Paul. I want nothing to do with the guy. But even if he, let's just pretend, and it's hard to, but just pretend he's not being accused of rape and sexual assault and these other things. You remove that, everything we've seen, just as him as a player being disruptive and being a pain in the Steelers locker room and being getting into it with Mike Mayock and the helmet issue and all those things, how easy do you think it would be for him to go into a system that, A, doesn't throw the ball nearly as much as he wants? It's been chronicled. He complained in a game where he got 17 targets. He complained in that game. So the idea that he's going to come in here where Tyler Lockett is your one and DK Metcalf is your future and you want to build him up, how amenable is this guy going to be? How pliable, how agreeable is he going to be to being a third receiver in a offense that's really built around running the ball?
Yeah, I don't know if he'd be the third receiver. He's that good. It would make us pretty incredible across the board. They'd have a hard time matching up with with those three wide receivers on the field.
Well, how about this? We've seen them try to you know, force the square peg into the round hole with Percy Harvin and with Jimmy Graham. Mm-hmm. Super talented guys that didn't have those kind of issues. Obviously, Percy had separate issues, but, you know, just trying to, we all talked afterwards like, oh man, they were just trying to force him the ball. They were trying to really just make him fit the offense, and it just never fit. Wouldn't they run into sort of the same thing with Antonio Brown?
Well, I think Antonio is a complete player. I mean, he really is. He's light years ahead of Percy Harvin. Percy had a skill set. Graham had a skill set, you know, that, but it didn't extend past that. So I'm going to say from a football player point of view, Antonio Brown is as good as they come. I mean, he's that good. But let me bring back the other part. I watched the Hard Knocks, and I watched how John Gruden and Mayock, how they treated him and could not have treated him with more respect and tried to bend over backwards for everything. And again, that's that mental part. It didn't matter. You know, he was just going to force the issue no matter what. There's no reason for him to do what he did. And he took advantage of some people who were very gracious to him. Every coach, every father thinks they can change, you know, their players, their kids. It's just, but also there's history suggests that, yeah, that's not going to happen. So I think it's a hypothetical that's not going to happen unless they have done enough due diligence. They've built a plan and said, here's what we're doing. Then you can make a case for it. I just don't see it happening on both ends. The locker room issue, his, you know, other parts about being accused of rape and so on and so forth. I just don't see it happening.
All right, Paul, before I ask you this question, I guess this kind of came up yesterday, surprisingly, between Jim and I. But, you know, I guess when we talk about this, let's, as our listeners and texters, just try to keep in mind that everybody's trying to do their best, okay, and that we all have good hearts and that we don't want people to die or get sick or anything like that. But I just wanted to ask you where your tolerance level is for risk as far as the coronavirus goes, because we see guys opting out right now. And Jim, you know, yesterday he said, look, even if one college football player dies, then it's one too many and that we should cancel the season. And I guess, you know, my response would be like, well, what if we knew there was going to be 10 that would die over the next 10 years? Do we just wipe out college football? So, I mean, it's such a difficult question. You have kids, I have kids, everything. Yeah. But, you know, as far as kind of what's going on and what we've seen recently with the numbers, where are you as far as, you know, whether it's having a baseball season or a football season?
Yeah, again, I think complex question. I'll start with the current players, and some of them opting out in baseball and basketball. We'll see what happens with football. I think everybody has the right to make their own decision, and it's important that, you know, they do their homework. And you know, if I've got, you know, $20 million put away in the bank, I can make the decision that I don't need to do this. I don't need to take on that risk. I do know that one thing though is when people make decisions emotionally rather than, you know, really off data, but just an emotional decision. And that to me, Jim's is an emotional decision, because obviously the easy answer is yes, we don't want anybody to die from this, but there are risks and statistics to that. Now, I'll give you an emotional decision. Dave, you know, me being in the investment side of the world, you know, we did a piece of research called behavior finance. And it showed the market had averaged around 10% over the last 20 years. And then it showed the average retail investor, you know, those of us listening and doing the show right now, averaged closer to 2 to 3%. And the reason why was off of emotion. They sold when the market was going down. They bought when the market was going up. So they had horrible behavioral decisions. I look at this as well. If you go and look at some of the data, again, you can't tell anybody the right decision on it. Everybody's got to make their own decisions. But if you go and look at the data right now, if you're under 45 years old, and this isn't even if you're healthy, you could even have, if you're under 45 years old, the chance of you dying, the research I just saw, was 1 out of 66,000. And if you were healthy and didn't have a pre-existing condition, the number even is way less than that. The average suicide today, 100,000 people, 15 people. 15 people commit suicide for every 100,000 people out there. That's, by the way, that's a startling number to me. So you got to put it into context on this. Those people who are in their 20s right now, it's such a low probability, particularly if you're healthy, that they're going to die. That doesn't mean it's going to be zero, and we've got to figure out what you're comfortable with on that. But when you start looking at those kind of statistics of, you know, you're more likely to get to die walking off a curb by a car, you know, being hit by a drunk driver, so on and so forth, and dying of this, I think they just need to know what that real risk is if you're a healthy person. If you're not healthy, and I got some people hit me on this too, look, I have a mother-in-law who lives here, and so I go to work every day. I'm around people. The one thing I do when I come home, I go straight upstairs, I change my clothes, and one thing we are not allowed to do is her and I are not allowed to be in the same room within 10 feet of each other, because we know that is how you get this. So I have to take that risk, but I'm smart about it, right? And so I think everybody is going to have to make their own decision. I think it's a really difficult question, but I think they need to really understand what the percentage or the odds of that is and go from there.
Yeah, it's obviously very polarizing, Paul, and I get what you're saying. I guess the counter to that would be, yeah, suicide is not contagious. It's not airborne. Car accidents are not airborne and contagious to people that have nothing to do with it. I mean, it's just, it
Bob,
becomes.
I agree with that. I just trying to put it into so people can look at what the data is showing, you know, and it's so remote of someone in their healthy person, an athlete in their 20s dying from this, that you just got to put it into an example of, well, here's what's going on out there. Because if the answer is if we've got to get to zero, look, we don't get a vaccine for 5 years. I mean, these are tough decisions. Again, that's what I said. There's not a right or wrong. Everybody's got to make their own decisions. I know one thing. We're back to work where we are. We're rotating people around. You know, football is a business too. You know, so be the best you can, you know, and maybe we don't have fans. We keep people separated. They're testing and all that stuff. You just do the best you can. And for those who don't want to play, you know, you don't hold that against them.
That's
my take.
Good stuff, Paul. We love talking to you every week. We appreciate it. Enjoy the weekend. Have a great weekend. Stay safe out there, and we'll talk again next week.
Thank you. Appreciate it for having me on, as always.
There you go. Paul Moyer with us every week. Always love catching up with him. We do have Mean Text coming up, so you still have a little bit of time. This is our Friday, as we told you. We have no show tomorrow or Friday, so we're off until Monday. So Mean Text taking place here in just a little bit, 710. 710 is the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. Just be creative. That's the only requirement there. Coming up next, though, we heard a little bit of Russell Wilson's appearance with Kevin Hart yesterday, but there was still more to get to. We're going to get to that coming up next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Coming up in less than 15 minutes, we'll get to your mean text for the week. In case you're just tuning in, this is essentially our Friday show. We've got no show the rest of the week, so we do mean text coming up in the next segment. You still have a little bit of time. 710-710 is the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. Just be creative is all we ask, and got some good submissions coming in so far. But we played some cuts yesterday, Dave, of Russell Wilson. He was on with Kevin Hart on his YouTube channel or something along those lines, and played a couple of the cuts. Some of them we didn't get to, though, and wanted to get to those today. Russell talked about, you know, when he knew he was going to be the starter for the Seahawks, and we all talked about that season with Matt Flynn. They spent all that money, and it was after that third preseason game where it seemed like, you know, things turned around, and Flynn had a sore arm. Everything just sort of fell into place for Russell. Here's cut number five, Russell talking about that.
You know, I got the third preseason game, and we just scored that game. We made some sweet plays, and the next day, Coach Carroll called me outside. He was shooting hoops. He loves basketball. He thinks he's Steve Kerr. He called me outside. He said, "Hey, listen, I want to talk to you." I'm like, "What's up?" He goes, "You're going to be our new franchise quarterback."
Wow.
And I just started thinking about my dad. I started thinking about all the stuff I've been through in my life, all the hard work, and it all came real. It all came to fruition.
Wow.
ever since I was young, I always kind of wrote out what was going to happen. I always wrote out my goals. And that gives me direction.
How about that? After he's out there shooting hoops. Hey, Russell, come here. Just to give you a heads up, you're going to be the new franchise quarterback. That Flynn guy we paid $10 mil to, he's going to go ahead and back you up.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I wrote this in the book that I wrote with Condota. I remember that third preseason game very vividly. Me and Rabel did the game because somebody was doing television or something. So, yeah, I got a chance to call that game. And one of the things that I remember is that he got clocked. There was a roughing the quarterback penalty. And later on, he threw a touchdown and got clocked again in the same way. I think it was Tom Bahali by the same guy. And he stood in there, took the hit, and delivered the touchdown throw. And I remember thinking, man, this kid is something else. And he had a run. I described it like the Indiana Jones, where he's running and the big boulders chasing him and everything's crumbling around him. And he just somehow found a way through this little tunnel. It was fantastic. But I remember getting on the plane and Pete Carroll's sitting up there in the first seat. And he looks at me, goes, hey, what'd you think of that? Why, man? And I looked at him and I said, that was bleeping awesome. And he knew what I was talking about. I knew what he was talking about, that's when you found Russell Wilson. Somebody asked, you know, what if you cut the two preseasons out? I think it was DJ. You know, does Russell be
one
the starter?
Texters.
Is he the starter? Oh, was it?
Yeah. If we limited
credit to DJ.
Yeah, don't do that. He doesn't deserve it. Just kidding, DJ. But yeah, it was a texter saying, hey, yeah, if we, you know, we were talking about them limiting the preseason to two preseason games this year, and if that were the case back when Russell were here, would he be the Seahawks starter?
Well, that middle game would have been there, which was the third preseason game against Kansas City. So the way they have it now, right? Because they have the first and the fourth cut out. Although right. In that first game against Tennessee, I was also calling that game, and he had a naked bootleg that fooled the entire stadium, including, and unbelievably, one of the only people that it didn't fool was me, because I was trying to say, well, there he goes. Because, you know, whoever was calling it was saying, you know, the play's going to the right. And So you would have missed out on that, because he really showed off his skills, his wheels and everything there. But you still would have gotten that Kansas City game. So, but yeah, it's a great question. You know, maybe it happens a little bit differently. But yeah, that was, but I think the thing that's most important about that cut there is that Pete believed in him. And when Pete puts his faith in somebody, you know, I told you before I did my first game, you know, in the regular season, he came up to me on the plane. He was like, hey, yeah, I know you're feeling it. It's your first one, everything. Hey, man, just go out there and let it rip. I mean, like, I felt like $1 million. I felt like somebody gave me a $100,000 check, you know.
He's so reassuring.
And when Pete gets behind you, and, you know, so I love that. And like I said, last year, my favorite scene was after that overtime win on Monday Night Football, where Pete and Russell are like with their arms around each other, like little kids almost. They're like ripping at each other's shirts and everything, and just the pure joy. I mean, I love that relationship between those two.
Another cut from Russell in his conversation with Kevin Hart, talking about the year after that Super Bowl loss was one of the toughest he's had to go through. Cut number six.
That was a heavy time, man. You don't really know what to say. We knew we could go win the Super Bowl. We knew we were going to go win it. All that kind of changed in that moment. And I remember going on my walk to the media and having to go down there. And I was like, what am I going to say? Like, I don't even know. Like, you know, for me, everybody deals with things differently. And I know for me, I wasn't going to let that define my career. I was going to do everything I could to, you know, come back stronger and come back. And to be honest with you, the next year was one of the toughest years, to be honest with you, because you had to deal with all the scrutiny, all the tough pain, and everything that you dream for and hope for is not always going to work the way that you want it to or foresee it to work.
He's right about that, and you could argue some never recovered in that locker room, that it lingered, and it brought in a level of distrust and, you know, maybe some questions about the coaches and, you know, agendas. And it just took things to a bad place. It seems like, just outside of it being a devastating loss, there was most certainly a lingering effect.
I like to think that they bleeped Russell there just to make him sound kind of cool, but that he didn't really swear.
He went, shoot, man, I didn't know what I was going to say.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I'm kidding. But, yeah, I mean, that's – he was talking about after the 2014 Super Bowl, right?
Yeah.
Walking out to the podium. Yeah, I mean, that coming back from that. And you're right, Bob. I mean, and he was the one that tried to get everybody together and say, hey, let's let it go. And he had a bunch of guys in Hawaii and, you know, remember that? I mean, they went to some big peak and I don't know if it was Diamond Head or whatever and said, hey, man, let's let this go. Let's air our grievances. I never really blamed Russell for throwing an interception there. You know, and maybe that's wrong. And a lot of people say, well, he threw it. But, you know, I felt like the thing that I took away from that play more than anything else was that Malcolm Butler made probably the best play I've seen in Super Bowl history anyway, for him to be able to pick that pass off. But yeah, that's part of it, man. It's not all the good time stuff, man. And that's why we talked about Good Time Charlie yesterday, about, you know, Cam Newton being a little bit that way. And Russ is, he's had to deal with a fair amount of, and especially that one. I mean, you're the guy that throws the interception that loses the Super Bowl for you. That's got to be difficult.
You have to admit, though, in all of the finger-pointing and the blame game that followed that, he probably took the least. It was Bevel.
Yeah.
It was Bevel. It was Pete. It was Jermaine Kearse. It was Ricardo Lockett. And all of it, I think, is fair. I mean, they're all complicit, Dave. They're all complicit.
Even the linemen.
Yeah, I mean, but, you know, you could argue, I mean, Kearse just got abused by Browner, and Lockett didn't really run hard through that route, and maybe Russ threw it a little bit, you know, off the mark. I mean, you know, but of all the guys, you could argue Russell took the least amount of heat for everything that took place, with Bevel taking the most of it.
Yeah, that's a good point. And a lot of people think Chris Collinsworth really lit the fire to that. You know, I mean, he was the one who was like, that's the worst call in Super Bowl history and everything. And I don't know. I just don't remember thinking it was that bad of a call. Obviously, it didn't work out. Okay. But, you know, if you look at the personnel, you know, we talked to Luke Wilson about that. That says throw it. They had heavy goal line personnel in. Seahawks had 11, three wide receivers. Now you could say, well, why are you throwing to that guy? Why don't you have your best receivers over there? Where's Doug Baldwin? I mean, there's lots and lots of things, but you're right. Yeah, I don't think Russ gets blamed a whole lot for that.
Yeah. All right, good stuff from Russ there. Meanwhile, it's not Friday, as we said, but it's our Friday this week, so we decided we will welcome your insults a little bit earlier than usual. Mean texts coming your way next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
We do this every week, and only a few days to collect the mean things you've said to us this week on the text line, because we've got tomorrow and Friday off, so we're doing mean text today. And surprisingly, you guys came through in a very big way with a lot of venom for a very short week. So we're going to unveil some of your work here. Who's reading these? DJ, Maura, who's going to read these?
I'm here. I'm ready.
Okay. Go ahead, Maura.
That's good, because you know, Maura always makes them sound kind of nice, and she softens the edge a little bit. So
that's a great point. She does dull them down a little bit. They sound more pleasant coming from her.
Yeah,
they do. Okay. Well, that's good. Jim's absence, by the way, did not exclude him from this. He's still very popular.
Good. What did we get?
Starting off with, after your day off on Monday, the 425 said, Bob, welcome back. Dave, hosting the show is like having my 15-year-old learn to drive a stick shift.
That's pretty funny, but I'm assuming that's not true. I've heard Dave drive the show many times. He does a fantastic job.
I got to say, that's kind of what it felt like. It did feel a little bit like that at times.
Screaming, no, grinding clutch, clutch.
Yeah, put the clutch in.
What else?
All right, guys, yesterday we were talking about Tom's 710 ESPN baseball lineup. 253 says, I've seen Bob play. I got a better swing in my backyard. Jim Moore can definitely outplay Bob.
Oh, that person has not seen a thing.
Patently false.
That's patently false. I will not pat myself on the back for many things, but I can play baseball. I've been playing my whole life. They've seen nothing. Well, and Jim Moore, come on.
I played softball with Bob, and Jim has not. So Jim always, you know, just because something sounds bad. Like, you know, if I say, oh, I can outrun this guy or whatever. No, you can't. Oh, I'll bet my bottom dollar. There's no, like, scientific basis or evidence or facts or anything. It's just everything with Jim just goes off of emotions. Oh, how do I feel right now? Well, I feel different, so, yeah.
It'd be different if he'd seen you run or race somebody else he could point to. Hey, Dave, I saw you race that guy, and he smoked you. Or, Bob, I've seen you play, and you were terrible, whatever. But it's just, nah, you couldn't do that. No way. No way.
Yeah. No basis whatsoever.
What else, Maura?
The 206 agrees with you. They said the only mystery about Jim batting seventh is that there are actually two people worse than him.
I think Tom was just being nice to Jim. Just moving him up in the order. I think Tom put himself ninth, so he was you know, being humble there and put Jim seventh in the lineup.
Yeah. Right.
What else, Mark?
From story time today, 253 says mean text submission. Little known fact, the person in Dave's story was a young Mike Sulk.
Dave throwing a beating on somebody. Turns out it was a young Mike Sulk he was beating.
Oh, he wasn't that small.
Come on. Oh, my God.
Oh, he'll love that. He'll love that. He wasn't that small. Very,
I don't,
very good.
I don't beat up on people that look like children.
Oh, this will go well. This will go well. What else, Maura?
Next.
425 says, Jim Moore, the Charlie Whitehurst of 710.
Oh, boy. Wow.
He's our clipboard Jesus?
Yeah.
Yep. Interception Jesus, actually. You know what? He deserves that because I remember I wrote an article talking about T-Jack and how a lot of it wasn't his fault. Because at that point, he was like a 65% passer. He'd only thrown one pick, and it was a prescription, you know, Hail Mary at the end of the half. There was, you know, all these things. And Jim wrote an article saying how I was full of crap. And, you know, I supposedly went to Stanford. And, you know, I'd like to see Charlie Whitehurst out there. And Charlie Whitehurst was a dud. So he deserves that one.
Yeah. Dave hanging on to that one. I remember that.
Yeah. That goes back to like 2010 or 11.
Yep. I do remember that. I do remember.
Yeah.
What else, Maura?
Dave, 206 says, your hot takes are like your NFL career, just good enough to stick around until Alan Aldridge comes along.
Yeah, that's not
even get that one out.
Funny. Yeah, no. Alan Aldridge. No. No, it's true. Actually, I thought it was maybe Bill Romanowski that got me shipped out of Denver. But what really got me shipped out of Denver is 5 knee injuries in 2 years. And probably at that point could not have outrun Jim Moore. So, yeah, that's what happened there.
I like this one from the 360. I often find myself agreeing with Jim, and frankly, that's got me a little worried.
Yeah.
The other day, the 253 said the same. Clayton and Jim are on the same page. God help us.
Yeah. How about this one, 425, Dave riding others' coattails to success his entire adult life. Cortez Kennedy, John Elway, Bob Stelton.
That's cold,
this
man.
This guy also, he also says, Dave Wyman not caring to get better since 1992.
That's good.
Yeah. All over.
Creativity. I like the creativity.
Yeah.
There is an order here. It goes Jim, and then when Jim's gone, Dave gets more. When do you, like, they're nice to you, Bob.
And, I get the truly mean ones during the ones that are probably serious.
I'm not joking.
Yeah, the ones that, hey, this is not a mean text. I really don't like you. Those are the ones I get during the week.
Yeah.
I like this one from the 415. I'm glad you guys get the next couple of days off. Those 3-day, 4-hour days must be a killer.
It's a grind, man.
It is a grind. It's like unloading the dishwasher. It just gets to you.
Not that bad.
253 says, did Jim have to take today off due to all of my mean text earlier this week?
He did the morning show on his own for a good 10 minutes, we heard this morning. So, yeah, sat in with Michael Bumpus today. Had to captain the ship for a while. I love that. I love that happened.
Was Bumpus supposed to run the show, or was Jim running the show the whole time?
No, Bumpus was supposed to drive the show, but apparently he had trouble connecting, you know, getting the connection from home. So Jim was on his own.
I have to say, I went back and listened to see if he sounded nervous or if he freaked out a little bit because I was going to play it for you guys, but he actually didn't.
Oh, how disappointing.
I'm sorry. I know.
Would have been more fun if he were tripping all over himself and nervous and just speaking in tongues because he just didn't know what to do.
Well, he texted us, and apparently he was, but it didn't sound that way, so I don't have a clip I can play for you, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say you're right, Mark, because I do see a lot of them directed at me. Here's a guy that says, Dave, one time, this is a 425, one time in the car, my girlfriend asked if you were Canadian. Did you already read this one, Bob?
No, I read it to you during the break.
Yeah, so asked if I was Canadian, and I told her, nope, he grew up in Reno. I don't mind being a Canadian. Every Canadian I know is either really funny or really nice or both. So
yeah,
and then okay with that.
I think the one guy that said you haven't been trying since 92, I think it's the same guy, says, Dave, I honestly enjoy listening to you. Absolutely zero animosity in those texts. All in jest. So they just wanted to make sure you knew that.
Oh. Well, you know, you usually give a hard time to the people you like the most, right?
That's what Jim always says as he takes you out at the knees.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, and Jim always talks about swinging at ankles. That means anything that's ever directed at him. Like anything that he ever says that is, it's never swinging at ankles unless it's directed at Jim. So,
yeah. This show, this is from the 253. This show sounds like a golf broadcast without Jim being there. Kind of ironic since he's the host of the golf show. Thanks for mailing it in today, guys.
Yeah, the golfing show, I think, is taking place on Saturday, right?
Yeah, I don't know. Is he taking the weekend off since it's a holiday weekend? Or I don't know what he's doing.
What is today? Wednesday?
Yeah.
So the 4th is Saturday. Is it usually on Saturday or Sunday? When's the golfing show happening?
Saturday, typically.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I wonder if he'll do that. But, boy, I'll be on the edge of my seat waiting to listen to the
golfing
show.
With bated breath.
No matter what. You betcha.
Anything else out there, Maura?
Let's see. We've got 509. Richard Sherman. Richard Sherman didn't need to ruin Jim Moore's career. He's doing fine on his own. Go Cougars.
There you go.
That's not how you say it, right? You say go Cougs, not Cougars.
Yeah, go Cougs.
Yeah, go Cougs. I got to read the 360 really quick. Jim doesn't want to go back to the studio. It's easier to kink your pants at home. I can't even get through it.
That's one he wouldn't appreciate.
He doesn't like anything that has to do with caking your pants. He doesn't like that phrase. So
anyway, yeah,
hilarious.
I like
360.
Anytime you bring that stuff up, Dave, it cracks me up because I know Jim is cringing. He just for whatever reason that's the line he doesn't want to cross. He doesn't find that funny at all.
But Bob, you missed it on Monday. We played a clip of Ian Poulter, a golfer, breaking some wind on the golf course, and Jim thought that was hilarious.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah. Well, I guess if it's a golfer, if you were a golfer, Dave, he'd love those conversations.
Oh, I see. That's what it is. Okay. He's a golfite.
That's what it is.
Golfist.
Yeah. A golfist or an anti-footballite or something like that. I'm not sure what you'd call it in the Seinfeld vernacular. But all right, great stuff from you guys. We always appreciate it. You guys can text in throughout the week, 710-710 to the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. Say whatever you'd like. If it's mean, just be creative, and maybe you make the cut every Friday. I'm certain we've learned something today, but we are going to find out for sure. What we learned is coming your way next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Wow, you sure know a lot of stuff.
It's great to learn.
Because knowledge is power.
There's a lot of knowledge on this show. We learned something every single day, and today would be no exception, right, DJ?
Well, with mean text, I think we always learn a lot with that.
Yeah, we do. We do learn some of the feelings of our listeners. That's a very, very solid point. Outside of that, what else did we learn?
We learned that Jim isn't really himself when he has to drive the ship.
I finally went when the rare time that Danny had to leave, because Jim was running the show on Danny, Dave, and More for a while whenever Danny would leave. I finally went to Salk or whoever, Kyle Brown, and said, look, I'll lead the show because I can't take Jim anymore. I mean, he just he was not himself. He was He would just become this like entirely different person. You couldn't joke around with him, and so yeah, I was like, "All right, I'll do it." And then Jim, you can be
Jim
yourself.
Yeah. People think we're giving him a hard time, Dave, but it really is a complete 180 from who he normally is. I used to love watching him walk into the studio when I knew he was going to be driving the show. Hey Jim, how's it going? Hey Bob. Hey. What's the matter? I got to drive the show today. And he would be just so tense and not smiling, and he wouldn't make eye contact and just nervous. It's amazing how much he changes when that happens.
Well, and you weren't even on our show, and you noticed it. I mean,
oh, yeah.
Of course, you're very perceptive, but, man, it was just like, come on, man, be yourself, laugh. Where's the gym that, like, gives people a hard time or whatever? Just none of that. He would just become this, like, serious newsman all of a sudden, and I was just like, okay, I can't take it anymore.
I'll do it. This is making me nuts. I love it. Yeah. What else did we learn, DJ?
Well, speaking of Jim, we learned how to get good behavior out of him.
The few times I've screwed up when I'm leading, best threat in the world, they'll shut Jim up instantly. You want to lead? You want to lead the show? Nope. Got nothing from it. And then you get nothing but good behavior the rest of the show from Jim.
It's like talking to your little kid saying, You want time out? Yeah, I'm gonna take this away, we're gonna take the computer away. That's Jim's trigger right there. You wanna lead?
Well, I'll tell you what, it's a good thing Jim isn't here, because I didn't even realize that I said this, but at the beginning of that clip I said the few times that I've screwed up. I did not mean to say that. But Jim would have jumped all over that, because there's a lot more than a few times that I've screwed up when I've led the show.
Yeah, we've all screwed up.
Each and every time. Not you, Bob.
Yeah.
Remember in the beginning, like, Jim, I think it was like the 20th day that we did radio, and you minced a word or did something, and Jim thought that was like the greatest thing in the world, because Bob finally made a mistake. He's one of us. And I'm like, Jim, no, he's not. It doesn't happen every day in every segment, okay?
Jim just waiting for that moment where he can pounce.
Yeah.
I love it. What else, DJ?
We learn that even though Dave is not an NFL player anymore, his tackling mechanics are still perfect.
This is like 3 years after my career. And so same thing, I hit him, and you know what? My coaches would have been so proud, because I had thumbs up, you know, hands outside. I was in a good crouched position, and I hit this guy like right in the chest. And he just, I was shocked. Like, I was like, wow. You know, there was at one point where I wanted to sit back and kind of admire it and go, hey, look at this. Look what I can still do. I'm 3 years out of the league. And so I end up knocking this guy back. And I swear, the way I envision it, the people behind him were lined up exactly like bowling pins. And so, and I think I got like a 7-10 split, but everybody just went like flying. And I was like, oh, geez. You know, now all of a sudden there's people laying on the ground, and this one person's over there going, oh, my hip.
7-10 split with human bodies. You know your form is good then.
Well, I said hands outside, and what I meant is hands inside. Thumbs up, hands inside. And that's how you know, try to hit them in the chest plate is kind of what happened there. But, yeah, the old 7-10 split. I did that because, you know, we're 7-10 ESPN Seattle. Also.
Perfect.
No,
yeah.
I didn't. It just came out. But
I like that you did want to sit back and admire your work for a minute, though. Just say,
yeah,
look what I did.
for like a split second. I was like, wow, hey, I still got it. Honey, look. Look at me. I still got it, huh?
She's over there going, shaking her head at me. You can't do this anymore.
Yeah. She did say that later. Like, I'm sorry, but you can't do that anymore. I'm like, okay.
You're right.
Okay, I won't. And I haven't.
That's good. You know, at some point, we both have to get our tempers in check and not engage in situations like that. Unless there's no choice. Unless we're left with no choice, Dave. And then we take matters into our own hands. But
I envision those no choice scenarios quite often. Do you too, Bob?
Yes, I do. I often I call them daydreams, Dave. I call them daydreams. Yes.
Bob, when you see Bob with a smile on his face and he's just kind of gazing off into the distance, he's really thinking about tearing somebody's head off that deserves it. And
somebody who's left me no
Bob's
choice.
Daydream.
I daydream about I daydream about walking up on somebody trying to break into my car. I don't know why. That's a very frequent daydream of mine. Like, I'm coming out of a store, and there's somebody, you know, trying to get in with a coat hanger or some kind of tool, and I'm walking up, and I'm just like, hi. Hi, can I help you? It looks like you're having trouble. Can I help you with that? And then I just pop it open with my key. Oh, this is my car. Oh, I guess you and I have a discussion now.
You're in trouble.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite daydreams. Anything else, DJ?
Yes, even though it's 4th of July this Saturday, and of course we're excited for that, we're even more excited for a certain program on this station.
This show, this is from the 253, this show sounds like a golf broadcast without Jim being there. Kind of ironic since he's the host of the golf show. Thanks for mailing it in today, guys.
Yeah, the golfing show, I think, is taking place on Saturday, right?
I don't know. Is he taking the weekend off since it's a holiday weekend? Or I don't know what he's doing.
What is today? Wednesday?
Yeah.
So the 4th is Saturday. Is it usually on Saturday or Sunday? When's the golfing show happening?
Saturday, typically.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I wonder if he'll do that. But, boy, I'll be on the edge of my seat waiting to listen.
Oh, see, he's getting more like pub Bob for said, that show with us, you know, making fun of him.
Yeah. I know. I like how Bob said, with bated breath.
Yeah.
That's the phrase. But yeah, I mean, look, he's on he's not even on the show today. And what did he make, like three, what we learned? I mean, he's more valuable to us. He's more valuable to us just staying off the air and letting us just talk about him. We could just like build Jim into like this legend, and then pretty soon he could just be somebody that doesn't even come on our show anymore.
Yeah, and the legend grows every year, and he becomes bigger and bigger and better. And he's got quite an impact when he's not speaking.
And the thing is, you know, Danny brought this up in the beginning. We can always make it just take an O out, so it just says Bob, Dave, and more, like more good stuff.
Yep. That's right.
Just take, you know, don't capitalize more anymore. Take out an O, and we're good to go.
It's a very flexible name. I like it.
Yeah.
I like it. Anything else, DJ?
I think after we learn that Jim is always here in spirit, I think we're done.
All right. Yeah. Good stuff. Want to thank our guests today, Gary Hill, John Clayton, and Paul Moyer, for joining us on the program. If you missed any of that, head to the podcast page at 710sports.com. Click the podcast button, then click on our picture, and it's all right there waiting for you. We are off the rest of the week, so we hope everybody has a great weekend. Stay safe, have fun, and we will be back with you on Monday right here with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Sorry, sweetheart. I didn't mean to, insult your little delicate sensibilities.
Yep. Yep.